Welcome back to the Don't Stop Me Now podcast, where being negative can be a good thing and being positive can turn the world against you. Hello, welcome back. I am your HIV positive host, Miss Jennifer Levon, and this is episode number 105. This is the spring break edition of my podcast. Before I get started, I right away want to thank Michelle Connolly for the coffee, and also I didn't write his name down, but I know it. It is, I can see his face in my head. He also gave me a coffee. Oh my gosh. Curtis Green. Thank you, Curtis. I remembered it. Woo. Thank you, Curtis. I appreciate that so much. There's a link in my bio, and sometimes people send me money for coffee. So, and here's my coffee right now. It's my second one of the morning. Love it. Okay. We have a kitty trying to come in. Hold on. Is that you, Sky? No? He ran away. He was scratching the door. Okay. Some business from last week, or whatever it was, 2 weeks ago. I had talked about at the Taylor Swift concert that when she does the song 22, which is honestly one of my favorite songs at the moment, There was a guy at the end of her walkway in Australia who sings all the songs in his car from TikTok. His name is Oliver Mills. That's the guy that I was referring to, and he looks like Harry Styles, and he's a little cutie pie. I could not find the significance of that song and the hat. I don't get it. She has a little black hat that she puts on. She wears it out when she's like coming on the stage towards the person at the end of the stage who's been picked to get the hat, the recipient of the hat during that song. It's a big deal, but I don't know the significance of the hat at all. Like, I looked it up on the internet. I couldn't find anything. It's just, she gives a hat away. She puts it on, takes it off her head. It's like a little black, you know, dancing hat, and then puts it on their head and gives them a hug and tells them that she loves them. And it's a very sweet little moment. Okay, so there's that. I had talked about the Netflix documentary called American Nightmare with the couple from, I think it was the Napa area, where the woman had been kidnapped and then like she was brought to her parents' home 4 days later in Huntington Beach, like 400 miles south of where she lived. And the whole thing seemed kind of made up. I mean, it does, it seems really odd, but anyways, apparently it wasn't, because there is a guy that they arrested, and so there is somebody who was guilty of kidnapping her and asking for a ransom. Apparently they picked the wrong girl. They were trying to get his ex-girlfriend. But anyways, the funny thing is it says that the couple moved to the Central California coast, which is literally where I live. Like, that's what they call this area, the Central California coast. So, and it says that she's a physical therapist here in the area. So I think she's in Santa Cruz. It'd be funny if I ran into them and said, I still don't believe you guys. I think you're full of it. No, but it's seriously, they're like, they live near me. I wanted to talk about my friend Avery, who I can't remember exactly when she reached out to me through social media. And she is a woman living with HIV. She's 24. She lives in Texas. She found, she was looking on her boyfriend's phone for anything that could, you know, show her proof that he'd been buying drugs. What she found instead was incredibly shocking. She found a video of him having sex with a man. And that led her to go get tested for HIV immediately. And of course, she was positive, and so was he. And I can't remember if he knew he had it. I don't think he knew he had it. But yeah, he gave it to her. So this is a case of somebody who has been in a relationship with somebody for 3 years, who was being cheated on by a down-low man, and he gave her HIV. So this is a case where she is an absolute victim of this. She had no idea that she was being exposed. She is a woman who was going and having her STD testing like every, I think she was doing it every 6 to 12 months, always testing for HIV. So she did everything you should do, right, to make sure that you don't get HIV, and she got it. And so she's been very, very vocal through her social media, mostly in her close friends, but she has done some social media that's been out to the public about how she feels about this diagnosis, how she feels about what he did to her, how she feels about women not transmitting. And I just love her to pieces. She's so outspoken. She's adorable. My God, she's just so sweet. She has the sweetest personality. She collects seashells like all day long at the beach. She'll drive like hours just to go to this one beach in Texas so that she can collect seashells, and she gives them away to people. And she reminds me of my daughter Ryan a lot, who is really into like cute stuff, like making frames and making up like homemade candles and like homemade lotions and body scrubs and stuff like that. I mean, she's just, Ryan does all that stuff. And they like little things like, you know, bugs, and like she would cry over a moth if she's like kept cocoons and like released them to the world when they've turned into butterflies. And she's just, yeah, reminds me so much of my daughter, Ryan. Ryan would do all those things. Anyways, she put out a video about 2 weeks ago, I think, and she talked about how it feels to have HIV. So I want to play that video now.
Do you know how it feels to take really long showers because you feel disgusting? Do you know how it feels to have people ask you if you have AIDS? Do you know how it feels to be asked if you're dying? Do you know how it feels that, you know, when you're talking to somebody, all you can think about is the fact that they are probably only thinking of you as having HIV? Do you know how it feels to be afraid of intimacy? Do you know how it feels to be afraid of a man being afraid of you because you feel like nobody will ever want to touch you without a condom, even though you can't give it to anybody?
Like, when I listen to this video and see her and how she explains how it feels, it's so real and so human, because all of these things that she feels are really happening, and they're true, and this is how she feels about it. And I won't get into it now, but there's been an issue with her job. She's been fired from her job, and it looks like it's HIV discrimination. Like, it straight up looks like it. So I'm following her story closely. I don't want to say too much because, you know, this could go into some kind of like, you know, legal litigation, and I don't want to, you know, talk about where she works or anything like that. But she's dealing with a lot. Like, this girl has been through so much. And this is like, you know, so typical with HIV, of all the shit that's thrown at you when you get it. I mean, this is not somebody who had done anything to get HIV. And now not only does she have it, she has to deal with the fact that she got it from her trusted relationship with her boyfriend, who was out doing shit with a man. So you can imagine how now you feel about, how do you feel about men and trust in general? You've been left with a lifelong, you know, diagnosis that you have to deal with. And also she has to take on all the shit that comes with having HIV. This is not fair. It's not fair. And it makes me so mad for her. And it makes me so mad about men that do this to women. And it's not talked about enough in the HIV community. It's basically like we're one big happy family, and this is how it should be. Let's be positive and let's let everybody come together and kumbaya. But you know what? That's not the truth. And that's like pushing like feelings under the carpet about how, you know, we feel as women getting this and where our place is in this world of HIV. Because in general, we are not part of this collective. It's so much gay men, and we don't know where the fuck we fit in, because we really don't. So it's upsetting to women, and I can speak for a lot of women, no offense to gay men, but they are the large percentage of who has this. So HIV stuff is all mostly catered to gay men. And so all of a sudden we get this feeling like that's how we got it. That's how we got it. It's insult to injury that we have to sit here and wrap our arms around the gay community when that's how we got it. We got it from men who were with men. And so now it's like this mind fuck of a thing where we have to be like, you know, arm to arm, or what do you mean, like elbow to elbow, or wrapping arms around. What am I trying to say? You know what I mean? We're like all, you know, happy, one big family. And I understand for the most part why it's good to be positive and all be on the same team. But also, no one talks about this other side of it. We don't want to keep being reminded that we're part of the gay community now, because it's how we got it. So I just feel like it's not addressed enough. And I like that she's, really outspoken about it. And it's probably made me be a little bit more outspoken about it, which of course, what does that do? It just gets us, we get told that we're homophobic, which is so stupid. That's not at all what it is or what it means. I don't have any problem with gay men. I just don't want my association with HIV to always be related to the gay community, because I'm not in that community. I'm not an LGBTQ member at all. But because I have HIV, there's rainbow flags everywhere. Like, and that's what, you know, when she was diagnosed, she got a folder from her doctor that had fucking rainbow flags on it. Like, do you understand like how that is such a slap in the face when this is how she got it? Like, I don't get how this is not being addressed more. And it's really frustrating. So that's what I will say about that. Okay, moving on. We had some good news in the news about HIV about 2 weeks ago. They say now that scientists say they've been able to literally cut out the bad, quote unquote, bits of DNA from infected cells to eliminate HIV using CRISPR gene editing technology. Scientists say that they have successfully eliminated HIV from infected cells using Nobel Prize winning CRISPR gene editing technology, working like scissors, but at the molecular level. It cuts DNA so bad bits can be removed or inactivated. The hope is to ultimately be able to rid the body entirely of the virus, although much more work always. It's always much more work is needed to check it if it would be safe and effective. Existing HIV medicines can stop the virus but not eliminate it. The University of Amsterdam team, who will soon be presenting a synopsis or abstract of their early findings at a medical conference called ECCMID in 2024, stressed their work remains merely proof of concept, quote unquote, and will not become a cure for HIV anytime soon. We love this. We love this. It's nonstop. It's like when they're filming a movie and it's like rush, 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 stop. And they take like breaks forever. Rush, rush, rush. It's the same thing. Like we constantly get these little, like, it's like a little carrot hanging in front of us, telling us that there's going to be a cure. And then, but then it's always the, but we don't know when. It's going to be a long time. This is just the beginning stages. So it's just kind of all frustrating. I know people send me stuff all the time saying, did you see? Did you see? I'm like, yeah, I know. I know. I've been seeing this for 8 years now and nothing's changed. So here we are 8 years in since my diagnosis, hearing that there was going to be a cure sometime soon. I mean, again, I feel cured. I can't transmit it. It's not bothering me in any way. I don't even register as having it when my viral load is taken. I just had it done last week and it says not detected, not detected. HIV is not detected in your system, Jennifer. That is what the lab says. We can't find it because it's not in my free-flowing blood. There's no virus there. It's locked in some CD4 cells that ain't doing shit to me or anybody else. So literally, I feel HIV negative. I feel fine. The only thing that hangs over my head, the only thing, is what everyone else thinks about it. It's the stigma. That's it. I mean, I don't, the people that I haven't told about my diagnosis, if I've been with any like partners that were like hookups or whatever, even if something was used or not something was used, it doesn't matter. They're not going to get it from me. And people will be on my ass on YouTube ridiculing my decision to not share that information, even though it's impossible to transmit it. I can't even give it to a baby. Like, I could make an entire baby in my body, push it out, nurse it. It won't get HIV. But, oh, sorry, I got some weird WinZip thing on here. But there's people that will get into my comments on YouTube and flip out about the fact that I haven't shared that information with a partner that I know zero information about their health history, but apparently I have to divulge mine that doesn't affect them, just so they can sit back and decide, judge me. Basically what it comes down to is just them judging me is all it is. So that is the only reason that I would want to get rid of it completely, because of the judgment. That's it. The judgment alone. And I love how people are just like, you need to tell, you need to do this, you need to do that. They are not living with it. They have no idea what it feels like to be on this side of it. And I get that. Like, I probably would have said the same thing had I not contracted it. And now I'm living on this side of it, and I know what it's all about. So that part's frustrating. People, you should. You live with it, and then you make that decision after. So anyway, the law protects me. And I'm not saying anything if I don't feel like it. And if I feel like it, I will. It's basically, and by the way, if I was not on the internet, I would never say anything. But sometimes I feel like sharing about like what I do on the internet about it. Because yeah, kind of proud about where I've come with all this and talking about it publicly. But that doesn't mean I want to share it privately. Like, it all depends. So. Okay, that's enough of the HIV talk. Oh, no. I had a couple more things to talk about. I was just interviewed by this company. I honestly can't even tell you their name or anything, but they want to talk to patients about like their experience when they were diagnosed. And so they were kind of pre-interviewing me before they do this like live interview that they'll record. And there was three ladies there. And she asked me about like when I was diagnosed, and I said something like, you know, and I had been diagnosed with AIDS. And she goes, well, stage three is kind of what we kind of generally prefer to call it, because, you know, AIDS is very stigmatizing, which is interesting to me. I get it. I get like they're trying to like rid the world of the word AIDS, because it is very stigmatizing. This is going to be a very hard transition for people to like make. Stage three, I like it, but at the same time, I went through it and I feel like I want to give it the name it deserves. It was AIDS, and it felt like AIDS. It didn't feel like stage three, because stage three sounds kind of like, I don't know, it just doesn't sound like it was that difficult, or it was something I just kind of went through. No, it sucked, and it felt like AIDS, and I feel like I have like the right to call it AIDS because I went through it. But they want to call it stage three. So I look it up on the internet, and basically it says stage three. It says, without treatment, a person may develop stage three HIV within 2 to 15 years after contracting the virus. So I was, you know, 2 to 3 years. The life expectancy after a stage three diagnosis is 3 years. However, with effective medication, many people never develop stage three. The likelihood of opportunistic infections is much lower than it was in the past. They need to say that the life expectancy of somebody with stage three, once they're put on treatment, is very good, but they don't have that here. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, you can have stage three or AIDS, and obviously everything can be turned around and you can live a normal life. That leads me into a little bit of, not a little bit, I just wanted to touch on HIDEA again. There has been some slight information that's been swirling around, I should say, about HIDEA and her taking natural remedies for HIV and that she did die of AIDS or stage three. So don't have any true confirmation on that. It is just speculation a bit, but that rumor is swirling around that it was indeed AIDS. I hate that because I've had some people write in my comments, see, people do die of HIV even when they're on treatment. And that is not the case. Even somebody wrote to me on TikTok and told me that her aunt died of undetectable HIV and that her uncle got it from her aunt when she was undetectable. Like, none of that's true. None of that is true. We cannot develop a stage three HIV diagnosis on treatment. It's impossible. And we cannot transmit it to anybody either. So, like, it's crazy what people are told and then they believe it and then they give that information to other people and then everyone's like, oh yeah, I heard of this woman who had HIV and she was on treatment and she died of AIDS. And I also heard that this woman gave it to her husband when she was undetectable. Wrong, wrong, wrong. You know she didn't give it to her husband when she was undetectable. You know damn well she didn't give it to him when she was detectable. She got it from him and we all know that. So all this is just the wrong information going around and makes my job even harder, but it's okay. I will never stop. And just look at my DL Men highlights on my Instagram, DL Men highlight 1 and 2. Check those out if you think that women are transmitting HIV and you will change your mind. I promise you. Okay. I have some story times, a few little ones, and that's all I'm going to do today. So here is my first one. My mom and I were laughing about this the other day. Up until I think I was 14, I was a freshman in high school for sure, my mom had always tucked me in bed. Always. Like, Mom, I'm in bed. Okay, I'll come in. And she'd come in and go, tuck, tuck, tuck. And she'd give me a hug and a kiss goodnight, and I'd go to bed. And it wasn't until my freshman year of high school that my mom and stepdad had gotten married that year. And my stepdad finally said, isn't she getting a little too old for this? And like looking back and like knowing I definitely did that in high school is crazy. Like, what the hell? What was I? Anyway, I was an insecure, full of anxiety type of child. And I guess I needed that little extra, like before I went to bed. And then, but it was just a habit. I just had not really thought of breaking the habit. And then we kind of laughed about it. And we did decide that it was probably fine to stop. I know I definitely didn't do that with my kids in probably even junior high. I don't know. I don't remember when all my tuck tucks stopped. It's weird. Like, I think about that a lot with my kids. And like, when was the last time I held Owen on my hip and put him down and would never ever pick him up again? Like, when did that happen? I don't know. With Owen, I always think of it because he was my last kid. So it's like, wow. Like, there is a moment where that stops. There's a moment where they stop calling you mommy and they call you mom. Like, I don't remember that either. Like, when did that transition happen? It's like, not clear at all. Okay, so there was that. I also thought about a time, this is taking me back to fifth grade. So I am left-handed. I bat righty, but I catch lefty. And so I played softball at like probably third, fourth, fifth grade through this, you know, organization called Bobby Sox. And I was always outfield. Because I sucked. I was like always right field and I freaking hated it. I hated trying to catch these balls that were flying and I had to judge like where to freaking stand to get them. And I was that kid who was missing it, like misjudging it. And it's either hitting me or it's flying behind me or I'm running with my freaking glove straight ahead of me and I miss it. And I could just feel everybody like groaning in the stands like, oh, freaking Jennifer blows it every time. I did suck during Bobby Sox. I don't know what it was, but I did. But fifth grade PE softball at school, they put me at first base and I was damn good. I caught everything, every ball that was thrown to me. And you do want a left-handed player at first base because that's just the way your body's turned. It's a great position to be a lefty at first base. And I don't know what it was at the elementary school level. And I was playing with boys too. It was mixed. They always put me at first and I could handle it. And it was fun. And I was they could count on me. I could catch the damn ball. Just the balls that were thrown to me straight, I could catch those. It was the big sky-high lobs that I couldn't freaking figure out. So anyways, at Bobby Sox, I was sort of complaining to some of the other players that I always get to play first at school, but Mr. Jonas, that's his name, Mr. Jonah, I said Jonas. No, it wasn't Jonas. It's Jonah. Mr. Jonah, he always put me at, and his daughter was on the team. He always put me right field. So he overheard, apparently, that I was kind of complaining about never getting to play first. So he said, oh, I don't remember how it came up, but I had a sense right away that he was annoyed with me. And like, you want to believe as a kid that people, like adults, you can trust them and that they're never going to like intentionally make a kid feel bad on purpose. But as an adult now and knowing other adults, I know that adults will do this and they don't care. They like, if they can get away with it, and they get to make their point and, you know, have their power because they're in a powerful position because they're older and more knowledgeable than a kid, they will abuse that power. So he put me at shortstop, and he was batting balls at me as hard as he could to prove his point that I was not good enough for first base. And I was missing them, and I ended up getting hit in the finger at one point. I thought I jammed my finger up, and I was trying everything to suck it up and act like I could do the job, but I knew I was kind of like blowing it because he was making it extra hard on me, like he was hitting it super hard at me to prove his point that I wasn't good enough. And I'll never forget leaving that day and just not wanting to play softball again. Like, I felt completely ganged up on by this man. And he was like, people knew of him, and he was a hothead, and he was a jerk, basically. And I told my mom about it, and I told my dad about it. Nothing was done about it, because I probably said, don't say anything, because it'll just make it worse. But I definitely was mistreated that day, and I've never forgotten it. It really made me feel so stupid, where I already felt stupid on the team, because I was in right field, but he made a point of doing this in front of the whole team, of showing everybody that I'm not cut out for it. And yeah, I never played first for him at all. I don't remember anything else about being on that team or anything. Just knowing that he won, and it hurt a lot. I was like maybe 9 or 10. So fucking mean, Mr. Jonah. You should be ashamed of yourself. He's probably dead. I don't even know. And then along that same track or whatever, like around that same time frame area, this is now going into junior high, I played volleyball. And just thinking about now, like with so many people that are in powers of, or positions of power that are in schools and, you know, churches and Boy Scouts and all of that, and how they abuse this power and sexually abuse kids and groom them to get what they want. We're so hyper fixated on it now or whatever. We're so aware that this happens a lot that, you know, there are a lot of rules in place now about, you know, you could never like drive a child to their house without some kind of, like, there has to be a form filled out and proof that, you know, you've had your fingerprints done and you don't have any, like, I mean, this is how it is for the schools now. You have to have proof that, like, anybody that volunteers in the school, or you're going to drive a kid or whatever, you have to have proof that you don't have a criminal background, you know, with anything with kids and all of that. So there's a lot of safety nets in place. And maybe there was back then too, but I don't think so. So I was playing volleyball, and I was on the eighth grade team. So I was 12 going on 13, and we were at a tournament, and my mom must have dropped me off, or I was taken there by another parent, I don't know, but my mom wasn't there for whatever reason. And my volleyball coach was also my PE teacher. Her name was Miss Dresser. Miss Dresser, D-R-E-S-S-E-R. Again, probably not alive anymore. But anyways, we were all pretty sure that Miss Dresser was a lesbian. Like, it was pretty obvious. So anyways, we get to this tournament, and apparently I brought the wrong shorts. I didn't have the right color or whatever it was. I did not have the right shorts. So, I guess we were short players, and they definitely needed me to play. And so in a quick decision, she chose to drive me to her house or her apartment and find a pair of shorts there that I could wear at the tournament. So I'll never forget this. Like, she drove me, it was just me and her. We got in her car and drove to her apartment. And I remember being in her, like, thinking, God, I'm in Miss Dresser's apartment. Like, this is weird. Like, she's my PE teacher. And I was trying on shorts in the bathroom until a pair, you know, worked, and we went back, and it was all fine. Nothing happened. But the fact that she had me in her car and took me to her apartment when I was 12 years old is kind of crazy. Like, that would be so unheard of today. You could lose your job if you did that. And it also happened in high school. We had a rule back in high school when I was a freshman, they ended up changing it, that you couldn't wear shorts to school. And it was a really hot day, and I wore shorts. And ironically, they were probably shorts that were longer than some of the skirts girls were wearing, but skirts were okay for some reason. So, and they could not get a hold of my mom because she was at work or whatever. And the vice principal, a female, drove me home, which was like a ways away. I lived way up in the hills in San Carlos, and my high school was in Redwood City, which was the town over. We must have had some kind of clearance for me to go to school there and not go to a school that was like closer, I'm pretty sure, but I took a bus there every day. Anyways, probably a good 10-minute drive to my house. She drove me there, waited in the driveway in her car while I changed from my shorts to, I don't know what I put on, a pair of pants, like whatever, like so stupid. Anyways, like, please, it was like probably in the high 80s that day, but I got in trouble and had to like go home and change my shorts. Like, I never ever got in trouble for anything. I was a really good kid. It obviously stood out in my head because it was humiliating to have the freaking vice principal drive me home. I went home and she changed, or I changed, but she stayed in the car. Again, another weird circumstance where somebody in power should not have driven me anywhere. Like, that should have never happened. So thankfully, I can report that I've not had anything ever happen to me with an adult or a man, for that matter. I've never, ever been sexually assaulted. Thank goodness. But I know, like, it's... I feel like most women have had a case where they've either been molested or they've been sexually assaulted by a man, after they were an adult and were maybe having consensual or not consensual relations with them, and they were assaulted. Like, I'm very lucky. It's never happened to me. That's about it for today. I think I will put a link in the bio. There is another survey from my ADAP Advocacy Association. It's really quick. You could be whoever. You don't have to be HIV positive or HIV negative. You could be either. It doesn't matter. It's just asking again, like, I think it's 5 or 6 questions, just like what you know about, it's not about the injectables. It's just about what you know about HIV, I think. Maybe something about medication. So there's no right or wrong answer. They're just looking for people's perspectives. That's it. And it's anonymous. So it's, again, if you go to the link, it doesn't even ask any precursor questions. It just says right away, are you HIV negative or HIV positive? Do you prefer not to say? Like, that's the first question. And then they ask like 4 more questions or 5 more questions that, where they're just trying to get some, information from people on what they know. And so if you wouldn't mind going into the link and did you hear that? It was my stomach. And answering those questions, I would be forever grateful. Okay, I'm gonna wrap it up. That's it for my spring break edition. It's a shorty, a goodie, what do they say? I can't think of the expression. I always like on the spot, I can't remember them. Short but sweet. There we go. That's it. Short but sweet. No, an oldie but a goodie. That's what I was thinking of. But this isn't an oldie. This is a newie. All right, guys. Have a good Well, for me, it's the rest of my spring break. But anyways, have a good one until next time. I love you guys. Thank you for listening. All right, bye-bye for now. If you'd like to be notified for any of my upcoming podcasts, be sure to subscribe. If you'd like to help this girl out, then please rate, review, and share my show. Thanks, guys.